Okay, so today we're doing a deep dive, a really forensic one, into Sinti-X Technologies. That's NASDAQ-SINT. And this company, well, it's just one of the most devastating case studies you'll find in modern finance. It really shows how a public company can systematically just destroy shareholder value, not by accident, but like as part of its business model.
Exactly. It's not a story of some sudden collapse. If you've ever held a stock that just dwindled to almost nothing, even while the company was talking up its amazing science, well, Sinti-X is kind of the textbook example of how that happens. It was predictable, really, driven by this fundamental inability to make money from operations.
Right. So our mission here is pretty clear. Let's unpack how they did it. What was the mechanism? And how did they keep telling these, sophisticated stories to fuel it all?
Well, the core issue, the contradiction, is fascinating. Sinti-X started as a medica back in 96. They were pioneers in using silicon nitride for medical devices, think spinal fusion implants. And these weren't just lab curiosities. They've been used in actual patients since 2000.
And they have serious assets, right? I mean, I saw mentions of a big vertically integrated facility out in Salt Lake City, certified for medical devices and aerospace too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. State-of-the-art place. ISO 13485 certified for medical, AS9100D for aerospace, and patents. We're talking 227 patent documents listed, high quality, high barrier stuff.
Okay, so that sounds impressive. But then you look at the stock.
Exactly. That's the contradiction. You see these great assets, but the company itself, it's a microcap, trailing revenues under, what, $2 million? And at the same time, they're consistently losing over $12 million a year, net losses. So functionally, SESNTX operates like an R&D incubator. It structurally needs outside cash, always.
And that need for cash fuels this engine of destruction, the dilute, reverse, split, repeat cycle you hear about. They need money just to keep the lights on and stay listed on NASDAQ.
That's the driver. It forces them into these continuous dilutive equity offerings. They're constantly selling new shares to raise cash. You see things like PIPE ES, private investment in public equity, or these at-the-market ATM offerings, often run by underwriters like H.C. Wainwright or Maxim Group.
So they flood the market with shares, which inevitably pushes the price down, often below that NASDAQ minimum bid price requirement of dollar.
Right. And when that happens, NASDAQ sends them a deficiency notice. They have to fix it or they get delisted.
Which leads to the artificial fix, the reverse stock split. They just poof.
Yeah.
Make fewer shares exist at a higher price.
Precisely. A high ratio reverse split. It boosts the price per share artificially, cures the NASDAQ notice, and buys them more time to likely dilute again later.
Okay, here's where the numbers just get, well, kind of insane. The sources mentioned five big reverse splits since 2016. The
Yeah.
ratios were 200 to 1, 100 to 1, 30 to 1, 12 to 1, and then 15 to 1.
Yeah, wait, just pause on that. If you multiply all those factors together, 200 times 100 times 30 times 12 times 15.
108 million, is that right?
108 million. That's the
Yeah.
total consolidation. So one single share of Cint stock today represents what used to be 108 million shares before 2016. That's why sometimes you see these historical stock charts showing prices like $1 million a share. It's not real. It's a mathematical ghost, just an artifact of all those reverse splits.
Wow. Okay. So to keep pulling money into a system that basically guarantees investors lose almost everything, you need a really compelling story.
You absolutely do. And Sinti-X has been masterful at crafting narratives.
Like during the pandemic, right? They pivoted to talking about silicon nitride's antipathogenic properties,
Yeah.
killing
And
viruses.
they had some science to back it up, too. There was a legitimate study, I think, from Virginia Tech showing the material could knock down SARS-CoV-2 virus titers by like 99.97% in just 10 minutes.
And then more recently, another pivot towards defense and aerospace.
Yeah, exactly. That was boosted by acquiring a company called TANT, and they landed a small $75,000 Phase I SBIR contract. That's Small Business Innovation Research. This one was from AFWERS, the Air Force Innovation Hub.
So these pivots, are they really about building sustainable businesses in those areas? Or is it more about?
It's more about feeding the cycle, really.
Yeah.
These narratives are expertly designed to leverage these, early stage milestones, a promising study, a tiny government contract. They generate buzz, excitement among some investors, and that creates the window, the opportunity for the company to go out and sell more stock, to execute another dilutive offering. They're essentially selling stories to finance their survival, not genuinely converting these pivots into substantial long-term revenue streams.
Which brings us to, well, corporate governance. Everything they did, the offerings, the reverse splits, it was all disclosed in SEC filings, right? procedurally compliant.
Oh, absolutely. Fully disclosed, technically, by the book.
But the outcome was almost mathematically certain shareholder ruin for anyone holding long term. If he held on, that 108 million to one consolidation tells the story.
And that really makes you question fiduciary duty. The board of directors has a duty of loyalty, a duty to act in good faith for the company and its shareholders. So the question becomes, did they fulfill that duty by sticking to a strategy that demonstrably guaranteed these massive losses over years? Or should they have looked at, you know, strategic alternatives much earlier, selling assets, winding down?
Yeah, it's a tough question. And it leads to maybe a final provocative thought for you, the listener, to chew on. Think about the role of the exchange itself, NASDAQ in this case. They act as this crucial structural enabler, but passively. They enforce the procedural rules, like the $1 minimum price, but they don't really make qualitative judgments about whether a company's business model is fundamentally viable or just, designed to perpetuate itself through dilution.
So what responsibility, if any, does an exchange have when its own rules and procedures are being arguably exploited to keep a fundamentally failing entity listed, drawing in new investor money year after year?
Something to think about. We'll leave it there for this deep dive.